Blog Talk Radio.
Well, welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks. I'm your host, David Clark. I'm a spiritual adventurer, and I suggest you become the same. This show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. It's my hope that you will come to see that despite our seeming differences, we're all basically the same. This is a no-holds-barred show. My guests will have differing spiritual belief systems, and some will have no spiritual beliefs. You may or you may not agree with things that are said. What I'd ask you to do is keep that open mind. This way, you can see where you can find common ground, so that you can relate rather than compare yourself to others. Now today I have the pleasure of introducing Dr. Yves E. Pataak. He was born in 1968 in Zurich, Switzerland. He is an author who works as a holistic coach, a hypnosis therapist, and an acupuncturist in his own practice. Writing is his passion. Six of his novels have been published, and other literary works have been awarded. Further projects are still underway. He has two children and lives with his family in a rural part of Zurich. For his medical studies, he spent 3 months in Jamaica and often traveled to the Far East, India, Sri Lanka, and the Caribbean. This brought him into contact with miscellaneous cultures, rites, and tribal medicine, and has strongly inspired him both in his work as a physician and as a writer. His main focus as an author is currently mystery novel and thriller. So he runs the gamut, folks. He does hold a U.S. medical degree in basic medical science and clinical science. So with that said, I'd like to welcome him. Is it okay for me to call you Yves?
Absolutely. Hello, David, and thanks a lot for having me on your show. Yes, Yves.
Oh, you're welcome. So let me just ask you once again, how are you doing today?
I'm very good. It's quite late at night here in Switzerland already, so it's going to be time for me to bed soon. So the working day is done here already, not for you in the USA yet.
Right. Well, hopefully this will be a relaxing interview so that you won't be too stimulated. I know that when I do radio shows in the evening, it's sometimes hard for me to get to sleep afterwards. Let me just ask you this. Are you open to receiving calls from people that call into the show? We do have one caller now Skyping in, and they just disappeared. But in the event that we have a caller, are you open to talking to them?
Absolutely. No problem at all.
Okay. That's great. Well, I'd like to start off by asking you about the many different genres that you've gone into, from spiritual to humorous to scary. What has compelled you to write in these different genres?
Well, Some people say it might be my character due to my Chinese zodiac sign, which is the monkey, because monkeys in the Chinese zodiac are notorious for being curious and restless. So you try to, you just want to try different things, right? And
yeah.
It's some kind of pleasant restlessness that makes you want to try out those different genres. And I can really visualize myself or feel myself into different kinds of worlds. Sometimes spiritual, sometimes humorous, sometimes scary, like the thriller. And I really like this variety.
Well, I do too. I've written in the humor satire genre, spiritual genre, self-help, memoirs, and dramatic and humorous stories. So I can relate to that. It's nice to be able to switch hats and just go with the flow. And I think that, to me, that's the secret of having a happy life, when you can accept that whatever inspires you is the road to go. As Joseph Campbell said, to follow your bliss. When I can do that, then I am leading a purpose-filled life. What do you think about that?
Oh, I absolutely agree to that. I just think that whenever you become too unilateral in life, you only do like one single thing, probably you won't be a very happy person for too long. I really think that you need diversity. I mean, even biologically, when it comes to our food, you can see from judging from our teeth that we're made to eat different foods like vegetable, meat, and so on. And I think that for the spiritual part, it's probably the same, that we're not meant to always be scared or always be happy. I think it's probably about experiencing many different emotions, many different inputs for the soul. I believe that our life is partly at least about mental evolution, about becoming more and more mature on the level of the soul. And for this, you need different stimulus.
Oh, yes, I agree. Go ahead, continue, please.
Yes, and so that's what makes my life, I'm very happy about this, very interesting that I can really delve into such topics both as a doctor, as a physician, when I work with my patients, that you really try to find which emotions are troubling, bothering them, or blocking their path, so you can maybe just like show them a new way. And I can use the same approach when it comes to writing, which is always something about finding out a lot about yourself when you see where your voice within leads you. It's always about finding out something about like flashing a light into the dark to some parts where we haven't been yet. And I think this is very stimulating for our soul, for the brain, to go into such different worlds. Like when you take a holiday, you usually come back as a slightly different person maybe. And this is something I really enjoy, that I have both those sides in my daily life, both with my patients and as a writer.
Well, you bring up several points that I'd like to ask you about. One is you talk about darkness and you talk about light, and we live in a dualistic world here, which is different from the world of the spirit as I've come to understand it. The mystic Jesuit Anthony de Mello wrote that there are only two states, fear and love, and the Course in Miracles says there's only spirit or ego. What would you have to say about that?
I would say that probably they are right. And I would say that, in my opinion, almost everybody still has their ego, including myself. I'm somebody who's very interested in spiritual lore and wisdom. And I think I've gone through a stage in my life where I've been mainly or mostly into spiritual books and beliefs and ideologies. And I came to the conclusion that I'm not quite such an anti-ego type as Eckhart Tolle, who is quite a genius and probably enlightened. But I guess that many people in the USA know Eckhart Tolle for his book, The Power of Now, where he enlightens about the ego. I think it's a great book, but I think that Tolle, to a certain degree, makes the ego our enemy. And I think that probably it's part of us that helps us in our development, that we should not try to devilize it. And as long as I'm aware that I have this ego, I can still decide for myself to live different aspects of life. This, it's not meant in any cynical way, but I just realized that many people who talk about themselves as being spiritual seem to be worlds apart from being spiritual. I think they're striving or they're struggling to become spiritual. And I think in many cases it's because they try to deny that there's a dark side, evil, the devil, or whatever you want to call all those symbols. And when you deny something, I think it follows you. And the ego, in my eyes, is a great symbol, like the devil or the dark side, something that wants to teach you something. So you have to look at it, you have to face it, to understand it and see what it's trying to show you. This is my current state of opinion.
Well, I tend to agree. I don't believe in the devil, but I do believe that evil exists in this world. We certainly see it. And I think that that stems from fear and all negative emotions that just ripple out in the same fashion that positive emotions ripple out. And I would imagine in your work as a holistic coach that you work with people on staying in the, on the light side of things, taking a look at their whole selves and embracing their shadow side and moving into the light, using the power of positive thinking, working with positively charged emotions and letting go of the, embracing all emotions, but letting go of the ones that take them down. What would you say about that?
Well, I would say that those kind of people are certainly to be found in my practice as well, but I wouldn't say that I'm only seeing people who are really striving for the light, for spiritual enlightenment and so on, because quite often people who come to me, like most people trying to find counseling in the, on the psychological or spiritual side, they are themselves being haunted by those subjects you could easily put under the dome of the ego again. Just like yourself, I don't believe in the devil as a real demon or entity, but when it comes to the ego, I think it comes in many guises or disguises. And I think, as I said before, that to face something has a very strong transformative effect. Like many people report that when they have a nightmare and there's a monster hunting them or just like running after them, usually the monster starts catching up and you get more and more scared. But if you can turn around during that dream, usually the monster will shrink or disappear or you wake up. So something happens. And I have the same experience in hypnosis therapy, that quite often I lead my patients into some fictive kind of, let's say, forest or clearing where they can meet their fears, maybe in an impersonalized version. So they see this fear as a person or as a monster or anything like that. And if I help them to come closer and closer to that monster, and I can make them feel safe by doing that, then usually there's a transformation happening all by itself without me using too many suggestions. It's just that the monsters tell them something, or they mutate, or they just disappear. And this is something that has a strong analogy in the real world. When you face your fears, you really get to the root of something, it disappears. And I think that's probably the same with our ego.
That makes perfect sense to me. I'd like to ask you what made you switch from being a general practitioner to being a writer.
Well, it was just a partial switch because I'm still doing my medical work, but in a different way. Because as a GP, I've been working as a general practitioner for about 16 years before I switched to what I'm doing now. I quite liked the job, but it didn't give me like full satisfaction. I think mainly because you hardly ever get to the root of a problem. There's this strong tendency to solve everything with tablets, with medications, and I'm not totally against drugs and medications at all. I just realized that they're not healing anything. They're purely symptomatic. So if possible, I'm always trying to get to the root of something. And since I also love to write, which is another passion of mine, I decided I'll have to change something in my daily life as a GP, and I switched to this holistic kind of counseling, started working less to create more time for my writing. So now it's really like 50-50% of my time in my practice or at home and writing. But altogether, I think I'm still working probably like 70 to 80 hours a week, but in a very pleasant way.
Sounds wonderful. What are the correlations between those two professions?
I think one of the main correlations is the creative imagination you use in both realms. As a physician, I try to really put myself in the shoes of my clients. I really try to get the feel of them, so I can sort of pick them up where they are. And then when I use trances or hypnotherapy with them, it's a lot about creative imagination to create the right metaphors or internal images, which have a very strong potential to change something within their minds, within their feelings, because the left side of the brain, that's more like the thinking, intellectual part, can easily understand a lot of things. It can analyze things, but it's quite difficult to change emotions. So I think the approach to talk to the right side of the brain, to the more emotional side, that's something that has a lot to do with fantasy and creative imagination, just like I'm using it as a writer. Whenever I write something, I do exactly the same. I just put myself into a different world, a different person, and then I just like let myself being guided wherever the path leads. As a doctor, as a physician, I think I'm more the active part. I'm more in control of things. And when I'm writing, I think I have more the tendency of just let things happen, of just letting it go and go along with the flow.
Well, again, I think that going with the flow is a wonderful way to live your life. Let's talk a little bit about some of your books. Can you tell us a little bit about what Dialogue with the Devil is about and how you happened to write that book?
Dialogue with the Devil is a book that has been inspired originally by Neil Donald Walsh's best-selling book, Conversations with God. I read this book some 10 years ago, and I thought it was great, very enlightening. And so I started telling my patients to read it too. And at least half of my patients came back with a puzzled expression, and they told me that the book was too complicated for them. So I was a bit puzzled myself because I didn't think the book was very complicated. I thought it was very easy and understandable. And at some point, I had this inspiration to write another book with similar content, but in a different language. And so, of course, from a different perspective. And I thought, what if somebody would be talking to Lucifer instead of God, like this guy in Conversations with God? And so I just imagined a doctor like myself in his practice, and he's like shutting down the practice for the night, and all of a sudden his laptop computer opens all by itself, and he finds himself in a conversation with the devil. Of course, I meant from the beginning that it's not really the devil in the end, but at least you get a bit excited about this idea that there's a very strong entity, some strong lower power, you could call it maybe, who talks to you in not such a gentle way like in the other book by Neil Donald Walsh. And so it's about this doctor who gets drawn into this conversation with Lucifer, and it's all happening within one night. So it's a very breathless kind of conversation with no pauses whatsoever. And interestingly enough, many of my patients or other readers who told me that they read the book, they really stated that they read the whole book within one single night, which was very nice to hear and very flattering, of course. So it seems it's not boring at all. And so that's how this book was born. And I think it's really the one book that was quite close to being a channeled book. It wasn't like real channeling, I think, but I had those inspirations in such a short time compared to my other books that it almost wrote itself. I must agree to what people said. It really feels like it wrote itself, yes.
Well, when you talked about those lower entities or dark entities, it made me think of some of the weird thoughts that have occurred to me, which I would never act on. I'm a very kind and compassionate person, but sometimes I'll see somebody walking down the street and I'll think to myself, I could hit them with my car and kill them. I don't know where in heaven's name that comes from, but I mean, that to me is pretty dark.
This is quite a dark, but quite a human thought, I think. Probably
stimulated okay.
by an ego or our own inner little soul. Who knows? But I have quite a lot of patients and clients who told me that they have similar thoughts at times, and they really can't explain where those thoughts came from. Just like yourself, sometimes you really have to wonder if they are inspired from other dimensions or entities or whatever. But they're interesting to follow in any case, to see what kind of effect they have on those people who have such thoughts. If you just dismiss them or if it makes you wonder if there's something you should explore.
Well, I sometimes wonder if it's some sort of karma that's haunting me from another life. I mean, we had a little discussion prior to the show where you mentioned that you were open to the idea of reincarnation, and I have visited several past lives, and in most of them I was a very nice person, but in some of them I was not. So I don't know if that's bubbling up or what, but it's all food for thought. And I guess as far as my life goes, it certainly serves me better to stay present-oriented and conscious of the moment and to live my life moment by moment and to enjoy the day as it unfolds. What's your philosophy about that?
Well, if I understand your question right, it's about if you should focus on your present life or try to delve into past lives.
Yes.
I just play by ear. Like all my therapies, whatever I do with my clients is something very individual, very custom-made. If somebody approaches me and wants a regression, wants a reincarnation therapy, which means I do a hypnotherapy that brings them back into a former life, I absolutely agree. I have no problem with that at all. I had quite a thorough education in reincarnation therapy with Mr. Trutz Hardo, which is Germany's most famous reincarnation therapist. And it's a very interesting field. But as I told you before the show, I'm not really trying too hard to find out for myself anymore if there are former lives indeed, or if it's just a fantasy, or if it's something like parallel universes. I think whichever it is fine with me, because the effect is always the one, or usually the one we want, that people going through such a therapy, they feel better after that. Like some people just go through their own death, maybe one or three lives back, and no matter if this is imagination or real life, if this really happened, usually they get rid of their fear of death after such an experience. So I'm very pragmatic about this subject. I just use it whenever it seems right to use that kind of approach.
Well, that makes sense. It also leads me to ask you about your book, Heaven and Hell, Who Cares for Karma? I'm wondering if, not having read that myself, if that deals with karma from this life or past lives, and if you could tell us a little bit about that book and where it's available. Is it just in German?
So far it's only in German, but I hope I'll get around to either translate it myself or find a translator, because I think it's a really funny book. I really enjoyed writing this one because that's one of those with a very humorous approach to a probably more serious topic, again, like karma and what you're doing in your life, if it's good or not, and if it has any consequences. So I just pictured this very cocky and arrogant plastic surgeon who lives in Zurich, rich, handsome, and as I said, very arrogant. And all of a sudden, there's like this quite unhappy little angel who tells him that he has to better himself, change his life, or he'll get a hell of a lot of a bad karma and he will suffer. And of course, this arrogant guy doesn't believe in angels. He thinks he's hallucinating. But not much later, there's this little she-devil that's trying to keep him on this old path of sin because she wants him for hell. So there's like this little battle, something quite archaic, something almost traditional, you could say, the battle between good and evil, but on a very humorous scale. So those two little buggers, the angel and the she-devil, really have a beautiful little war over this plastic surgeon. I meant this book to be humorous mostly, but people who read it told me that you learn a lot about karma and its implications just like on the side. And so I think it's one of those books that's mainly a novel that's meant to entertain, but you still have something you can learn from it, I think.
Now, you have another book that's called Can't Be Buggered with Karma, is that correct?
Exactly. That's the second book
Yeah, no, go ahead. Please tell us about it.
Oh. That was the second one that was more a book for my practice, or maybe it's like my only real how-to-do book. It's a practical guide about different ways of looking at life from a different angle and including all the techniques to really change something all by yourself. So the first part of the book is more all theories about from scientific to spiritual to esoteric, looking at all those subjects from a pretty detached and neutral point of view, I hope, just to show that you don't have to commit yourself to one side and become a fanatic and always say, I'm absolutely down to earth, I don't believe in all that esoterical nonsense, or that you only talk to angels and you don't want to keep your earthly body any longer. I have quite a lot of people who really become a bit too almost fanatical about their point of view. And I think it's about balance. So this book teaches you how to rebalance yourself physically and mentally by changing your point of views and using different techniques that you can do mostly all by yourself. And it's very easy to read, also quite humorous, quite, let's say, on the light side. And most of my patients who bought this book, they keep telling me that they keep reading it over and over again because they always find new chapters they want to try out. So I think that's a very usable guide for a practice that's on the holistic side, or for anybody you know who wants to give this book to somebody who both speaks German and is very open-minded to trying something themselves without always needing a therapist.
Now, does the book, the techniques provided in the book, do they assist people with overcoming karma?
Excuse me, I didn't understand the question.
I wondered, you mentioned that the book contains techniques, and I wondered if those techniques would assist people with overcoming negative karma.
It depends what's your understanding of overcoming negative karma. If you really follow the karma thought, of course you should better yourself in the spiritual way so you won't keep that karma in your next life. Of course,
right.
I'm still trying to focus mainly on this life here because I think this is the
right.
one that we're actually living. But of course, if somebody would, let's say if somebody is facing a problem they can't solve, they've tried everything from allopathic medicine to all kinds of complementary medicine, then I think it would be wise probably to try some reincarnation therapy or do other things that help you to get rid of more negative thoughts and or tendencies. But the word karma in that book, again, is not to be taken absolutely seriously, like if I were a Buddhist who really believes in karma from A to Z. I'd rather invite people to think about it, to find out what they believe themselves. I think that's a very important point to me. I believe that we can only believe. We can never know anything. I think our senses are highly deceivable. It's too easy to deceive our brain, our ears, our eyes, all our senses. So whenever we come up with a theory or with a belief, I think it's good to know it's just a belief, but a belief that will influence our life and our well-being. And so I think the word karma in this way means that you can just like look at yourself, the way you think, the way you look at things, the way you act, and everything about your life, if maybe it's time to reevaluate your whole situation, to be open-minded about the change. And I think that within the karma law, you will find you usually feel better by doing good. This is a general consensus that most people have. But I would never tell
yes.
people not to do a specific thing. I think they have to do their own to have their own experiences, just like kids. They have to walk, stumble, and fall, and get up again to learn how to walk. And I think for us grown-ups, the same rules will apply. We have to have our own experiences.
Well, I think when I was talking about overcoming karma, I was moving back to the present life, and of course I can understand, based on our earlier conversation, why you were talking about the reincarnation therapy again. I'm just thinking in terms of so-called wrongs that we've committed in this life, how we can make amends to other people and kind of not only assuage our own guilt, but hold out an olive branch and, you know, basically say that we're sorry, admit that we were wrong, and that we, you know, hope that through our changed behavior that that person will accept us and forgive us if possible.
Yes, absolutely. I think I've integrated quite a few rituals, you could say, that help you, for instance, as you just mentioned, to forgive. And but not just for forgiveness sake, but I'm trying to make my readers understand why you should forgive somebody. Because when it comes to forgiving, quite often from the spiritual point of view, the key message is because it's right to forgive, dot, period. And I'm not quite happy about this explanation. I think one of the most important explanations why to forgive is important is because otherwise I'm harboring my own poison within myself. If I feel guilty,
right,
or if I hold a grudge, or if I keep something within me, it's not the other person who suffers, it's myself. And so I think if, let's take a provocative issue like the Jews who say, I could never forgive Hitler for killing all our fellow citizens back in World War II. I think this is an insane thought that you should not forgive a monster like Hitler, because Hitler doesn't care. He's dead. So whatever happens to him, karma or not, is not our business anymore. But it's our business if we harbor feelings of hatred or a grudge within ourselves, feelings that might lead to something physical like an ulcer or a headache or a stroke or something even worse. And I think it's very important, even from the practical point of view, to get rid of such negative emotions, because we keep poisoning ourselves and not the other person.
I totally agree. And I'd like to explore the subject of how negative emotions, grudges, resentments, whatever, that are held within are symptomatic and can cause physical symptoms of physical disease. Can you talk a little bit more about that, and whether or not it's possible when dealing with emotional healing to therefore achieve physical healing?
Absolutely. This is one of my most common subjects in my daily life as a holistic coach, that I'm trying to introduce the possibility to my clients that maybe almost everything is psychosomatic, if you want to call it that. Like psychosomatic medicine knows certain rules, like maybe if you always keep everything within yourself, that maybe you get an ulcer because it really gets to your stomach, you get a stomach ache or you get a headache, and certain constant negative emotions really seem to lead even to greater physical trouble. But I'm trying to just like ask the question if it's possible that almost everything starts within our mind, our soul, our brain. And this is the center of our whole health, basically, if we're healthy or if we're ill. And something very interesting is, for instance, I don't know if you've heard of this method, emotional freedom techniques.
No, I have not.
Okay. Anyway, this is something that an American engineer came up with some 20, 30 years ago, Gary Craig. And in this method, you usually only address your emotional problems like heartaches and grudges and fears and so on. And people who can rid themselves of those negative emotions quite often report that some physical problems disappeared, like they are not suffering any longer from migraines, lower back pain, irritable bowel syndrome, and so on. And I think it's highly interesting that you can even neglect to even talk or think about your physical illnesses, and you only address your mental, your psychological troubles, and your body will be healed. And this keeps, this is something, a repetitive pattern that you see in many, many people. So whenever I try to work with people who have tried everything, which is like quite a big part of my clientele, they go to many different doctors or healers before, and they end up in my practice because nothing worked. And this doesn't mean that I'm a miracle worker at all. I'm trying to teach them how to heal themselves. And quite often they can do it themselves by learning the proper methods, like, for instance, this emotional freedom technique. Very easy to learn. You only need like 3 to 5 minutes per day. And within a few weeks, you can change a hell of a lot within yourself, both mentally or physically. And the same counts for hypnosis, hypnotherapy. I think it's very important to make people aware that there might be a possibility that they can change their internal landscape by simple methods of visualizing and feeling, that you start talking the language of the right side of the brain, and that you reach totally different control panels in a way. You can change things that you were not able to change before. And this is nothing that has to do with magic. It's something pretty simple. You just have to open people's eyes so they can really see that to find real health, to really get to the root of a problem, usually takes the approach, I'm doing it myself, I'm changing something myself, not always trying to find the passive therapy that somebody will do to you.
Do you believe that mental illness is also psychosomatic? As analogous
I think that a lot of mental diseases are probably the result of, how shall I put it, a wrong kind of thinking. Of course, this is judging. But I think if you are very much on the ego side of thinking, where you see a lot of trouble, where you see a lot of hatred, dangers, evil people, and so on all around, if this is your perspective, I think this can trigger mental illnesses. For instance, when I look at my schizophrenic patients, I think I never had a schizophrenic patient who didn't suffer any kind of trauma quite often in his early life. Maybe they have been abused by their parents, or they had some other quite bad troubles, which probably triggered the disease that they might have had dormant somewhere within their system. So I think you can learn to think in a different way, and this new kind of thinking can be healing indeed, yes.
Thank you. Let's get back to your books for a moment. Which ones are available in English?
For the moment, it's just my first thriller, The Healer, which is on ebook. You can buy it at Amazon. Then you've got the Dialogue with the Devil, which, by the way, just has been published as an ebook, as an audiobook in Spanish, which is quite interesting to me because I don't speak Spanish, but it seems like it's going to work itself into the Latin world. So we've got Dialogue with the Devil in English, and my other thriller, The Screener, which is also available in English.
Okay. And I'm sorry, did you say The Healer was too or no?
Yes, it is. So there are three books for the moment, those two thrillers.
Okay.
One is The Healer and The Screener. And the more spiritual book is Dialogue with the Devil. All three you can purchase at Amazon or almost anywhere you want.
Now, I understand that you especially enjoy the thriller genre. What has been the attraction for you to that genre?
I think part of it, to be truthful, is intrinsic. I think I just like it or love it. Ever since I was a kid, I think I had this kind of attraction for Edgar Allan Poe and other writers that are more on the darker side of genres. And I think that I completely agree with Stephen King, who is like one of my great idols when it comes to thrillers, that he once said that to that a thriller is a very good and safe way to approach your fears or to face your fears, which of course brings back what I said earlier in this interview, that I think you have to face your fears rather than just try to run away from them or try to deny them. So I think when you get into the thrill of a thriller, you will realize where you really get scared, and you might ask yourself why that is so. And some people might overdo it. Maybe they exaggerate and only feed their brains with all kind of sinister scenarios and thoughts, which probably will bring some consequences too. But if you keep the balance like I do myself, I think it's something that can stimulate certain parts of your being, of your soul, of your brain, that will have some effect on you too. So of course, a lot of spiritual people would disagree with me in that respect. I am certain and I completely understand, but I think that nothing in this world is for nothing. I don't think that thrillers should be abolished and it's something bad or something that belongs to the devil or whatever. I think it's something that can be the right thing at the right moment. But I would probably not recommend somebody to only read thrillers or horror novels all their lives, because probably this will trigger something which might be unpleasant on the long run.
Let's return to the subject of evil. Do you think it has justification in this world?
Certainly. As I said, I think nothing comes from nothing, or nothing is for nothing, rather. So I think that if we live in this world of polarity, of good and evil, of yin and yang, and so on, I'm absolutely certain that evil, or what we call evil, has a justification, that it has a meaning, it has a sense. Probably even as a metaphor, you could say, if you find the shadow and you follow it in the right direction, you will always find the source of the light, eventually. And I think that we're probably meant to experience this good and evil, darkness and light kind of life. What leads me to believe that is that I've been watching or observing people who consider themselves very spiritual. And quite often I find that those people might be the most problem-ridden people I know, and not those people I consider as the villains or the bad guys, because those people have the tendency to try to escape from their problems by becoming or proclaiming that they're spiritual. And I think this is, to a large extent, some kind of denial. They're trying to look at parts of their own person. And in psychology, you talk about the different personae, the different persons you have within yourself. And I think this is like just like brushing all the unpleasant parts under the table so you don't have to look at them. But all those little guys that you just like throw under the table, they will gather and start a revolution eventually. So you have to know them, you have to acknowledge them and deal with them. So I think this is something that's very important to me, that we have all those tools, all those different issues that have to do with polarity, with good and evil. And I think it's about facing it, about understanding it, and not about denying half of creation. This is my belief.
Well, it seems that when we do deny it, that we tend to project what we don't want to face within ourselves onto other people, which leads to conflict. And I found that when I do that, that there is an issue that I need to look at within myself. Things like prejudice, for example, which has come up in my past because of some programming, stigma against people of different sexualities, just some quote-unquote defects of character like arrogance. I used to pretend that I was a very humble person, but really I was wallowing in not humbleness, but in humiliation, because I did a lot of things that I was ashamed of, that I didn't want to admit. And so I would pretend I was holier than thou. And maybe that's the kind of person that you're talking about.
Yes, I think that's exactly it. But in any case, I think I would never condemn any person who does something wrong, because I don't really believe there are wrong things. I think it's all about experiencing different things to evolve. So maybe you just found within yourself that you want to change some of your ways. But I think it should come from within, from an inner understanding, and not just because some people tell you to act or think like this and that. And this is a tendency that is very strong in our society. So I think whenever you encounter things like egomania, arrogance, prejudice, and all the things you mentioned, I think you just have to be aware that you're walking in ego territory, basically. And I think that's fine as long as you're aware of it. For me, each time I get angry or depressed or I get any kind of negative emotion, I just try to remind myself, all right, I've been caught unawares by my own ego, and so now I can deal with it. And I think this is something that would help a lot of people, just to be aware we do have this ego, and probably it's about dealing with it and maybe just transforming it, or maybe getting rid of it by not needing it anymore, because we really learned something. So this is all about this subject you brought up about evil, if it has its justification. I think, yes, it's here to teach us something, and not just because it's evil within itself. Just, I think it's just a part of creation. And I think to judge if something is good or evil is something totally subjective. If you're watching a tiger running after an antelope, you can judge the tiger as such a fine, beautiful animal that it should catch the antelope and eat it. Or you could say, oh, this poor little antelope and this mean, evil tiger who wants to kill it, and so on. I think it's purely subjective how you judge things. But I think that if you go down to the root of it, it's about learning. It's about understanding yourself. Just like it says on the Oracle of Delphi in Greece, historically they say, it goes, you should recognize yourself as a human being. I think that's the key thing, and not always to recognize what your neighbor is doing wrong.
Well, you know, I liked what you were saying about not looking at things as necessarily wrong. Or I suppose the opposite could be true, that things are not necessarily right, because we all have unique perspectives and no two people are going to see things the same way. How do you deal with people that are, I assume you deal with people that are in conflict with other people who have judged a situation as somebody having done them wrong, when without taking a look at their own part in the situation?
Absolutely. I think this is one of the most common things I encounter. This, I don't know if about the idiom in English, but it's about seeing the dust particle in the other guy's eye, and you don't see like this big fat wooden beam within your own eye. Or I don't know about the idiom in English, but I think you get the meaning. You always see the fault or the wrong within the other guy or the other person. And this is something that I've been dealing with, well, almost on a daily basis, I think, because so many people feel that somebody or something has done them wrong. And of course, it is just like one of those fairy tales that the ego keeps telling us, or that we tell ourselves, somebody has done me wrong. And I think nobody will ever prove that it's wrong in the neutral sense, because there is no neutrality. It's always subjective. And we're very much influenced, of course, by our culture, our law, our jurisdiction, and so on. So, of course, if you say, I'm living in the USA or in Switzerland, according to this and that law, somebody did me wrong, I think that's perfectly fine that you accept special rules of a special game, but that you're still aware that it's just a game we sort of started. There is no profound truth in law the way we're using it today. It's just a rule that we came up with to satisfy as many people as possible. But if you say that somebody did you wrong, as you said, if you come up with the thought of karma, you could say, aha, somebody is just paying you back something that you did in your last life, or maybe you were meant to have to go through this specific experience because it's good for your own personal development. There are so many different ways to look at things, so that quite often I very much agree with Byron Katie, this famous American coach, who says she's a lover of the truth or of reality. Sorry, not of the truth. She's a lover of reality. So whatever happens, happens. And what happens is what's meant to happen, probably, because you need this experience. Everything else would be just another theory. So I think if you feel that whatever happens is all right the way it is, because you can't change it anyway, you will lead a much easier life than if you keep being in conflict with whatever happens or whatever people do to you. So this is something I'm trying to teach a lot of my patients, to just realize if they can't change something, to really learn to authentically accept it, not just lip service-wise, but really and deeply accept it. Then you find peace.
Well, that's a challenge. You talked about learning earlier, and of course there's a learning curve to everything, and one never stops learning if one keeps an open mind. I'd like to explore your ideas around how we might achieve world peace. This is a subject that seems to be in the front of a lot of people's minds, in that we still live in a world where there is conflict and where there are things that are atrocities happening. How do you think we can, on an individual basis, project peace and meet our enemies and see the good in them instead of focusing on the quote-unquote bad?
Well, I hope you have 2 or 3 days' time so I can really go into that.
Well, I also want to give you an opportunity to say anything else that you want to say, so maybe you could condense it.
No, I just condense it. Because briefly, I have 2 very different opinions about this topic, and both are pretty provocative, probably. One part of me says that who says we have to get world peace at all? This sounds like such a fantastic idea that maybe we forget to look at another possibility, that we're not meant to have peace yet, at least, because this struggle, this duality thing is something that's meant to be here and that's meant to help us in our development, that we're not ready for peace yet, that we just realized it feels good to have this peace, but to really reach it, we should change human character at one single go. Like, if you could just, like, set out some infectious particle that would kill the ego, and all people would just, like, wake up and see, hey, everybody is nice, everybody's fine, and we just stop going to war over any stupid little topic, that would be fantastic. But I just wonder, is it really meant to be? I don't know if there's a higher power that's put us on this planet or if it's just evolution, but there's nobody who ever came with a proof that to have peace on Earth is the ultimate goal. I think it sounds good. I would love to see peace on Earth, or at least part of me says so. But I'm not quite certain if it's really about having peace on Earth right now. I'm not the guy who would say I'm trying to create a war artificially now, at least not from my side. But this is one of my thoughts. And the other thought is, if you go into quantum physics, you will see that it covers quite a lot of ideologies that are similar to reincarnation, karma, and the spiritual beliefs, that maybe you just create your own world, but not necessarily for your next life. Maybe these are all parallel lives. So if you become a more and more peaceful person yourself, maybe you will live in a world that seems peaceful or that is peaceful. Like, maybe some people are in countries that are pretty peaceful, maybe because they made themselves being there on the karma level or on a more here and there level, I can't say. But I see that so much in our work is about perception. And in spiritual life or in spiritual lores, you find the idea that everything is maya, everything is just an illusion, everything is a projection of our soul. Just like the shamans in Hawaii believe that you create your own reality. If it's so, which is not provable or disprovable, then I think peace on earth will start within yourself and not within the others. You can completely disregard the others and you just try to find that peace, that freedom of the ego within yourself, and you will experience a world that's mostly at peace. This is my other internal theory.
Well, you know, I believe in the power of attraction and that putting forth an example can inspire other people to find out what the secret is. I liked what you were saying about finding peace within oneself. How do you coach people to do that?
Well, the first question is if they want to find peace within themselves, because I never do anything to people that they don't want themselves. So the first part of the coaching usually is to find what people believe in, what the problem is, if problem there is, and what they really want. So if somebody wants to find peace within themselves, I would probably try a dual approach by trying to find if there's any negative factor that keeps them from being at peace or if there's a lack of something. You could say there's too much fear, that would be a burden to get rid of, or there's a lack of faith, for instance. And then we try to find a custom-made approach that will be just right for this specific client so he or she can find peace of mind eventually, sometimes in a very short time, sometimes it takes a bit longer. But I think it's a very custom-made kind of approach. There is not one single ideology I could ever propagate and say, you have to do this and that, and you will find peace on earth or peace within yourself.
Well, thank you. Yves, do you have a website?
Yes, I do. So there are basically two. I will just try to dictate you the easier one. That will be www.dryvespatak.com. So that will be Dr. YVESPATAK.com.
Thank you. Is there anything you'd like to say in the next minute or two that we haven't covered?
No, I think we talked about a lot of things and it was fun. It was a really nice
talk. We
did.
It was fun. And I thank you. What time is it where you are?
Now it's 10:30 in the evening.
Oh, my. Well, it sounds like it's time to retire for the day. It is 6 hours earlier here where I am on the East Coast of the United States. And this is an international broadcast. However, it's English, so most of the people that are listening would be looking for English books. And again, Dr. Patak's books that are in English are The Healer, Dialogue with the Devil, and The Screener. And you can check on Amazon.com or check with Yves on his website. Is that a way people can contact you?
Yes, they can contact me via email or via Skype. I think those are the easiest. Or, of course, you can call me on the phone as well, but I think it's probably easier either on Skype or on my email, which is ypatak@bluewin.ch. But you find it all on the website.
Great. Well, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much, David. Have a good day.
You do the same. So once again, we come to a close. Now we can pause and reflect upon the idea that we are all united through the diverse tapestry of our individual gifts. There is no real thing of separation except in our own minds. We are each unique expressions of the ultimate source of our beings. We are spiritual beings, a human experience, who are having a spiritual experience. Have a great week, and remember, whatever you dream, you can realize.
You have been listening to Different Strokes for Different Folks. To find common ground and take it to the next level, here on Blog Talk Radio with David Clark, every Friday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. You can listen to this broadcast again on srbroadcasting.com.